afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Tales from the Couch Zone. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Just enjoying that bit of nostalgia there, because that was some of my earliest childhood memories. Okay. From television shows. And one of my favorite shows was when I was a little kid, was Starsky and Hutch.
Okay. Does that make me Starsky or Hutch?
I'd be the blonde one. So you could be the...
Okay. That's cool. I can live with that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's not waste any time. The reason why we're doing this show today, we're talking Suicide Squad.
So we are. I went to see Suicide Squad this week. I went on Thursday, and the first time in my life I actually went to a midnight showing.
Ooh.
Which I've normally, I sort of, when a new film comes out, I'll go first thing in the morning on the regular day. But this time I just, you know, really wanted to see this film, and so I basically booked a midnight showing. And I've got to say that despite all the reviews and all the negative feedback and all people going on about the Rotten Tomatoes rating and everything, I've got to say I absolutely love this film. I really did enjoy it, and I was sort of really relieved, because this was a film that I've been looking forward to for so long. You know, from all the trailers and everything, and also people, if anyone listens to this show, they'll know that I've got this, you know, mad comic crush on Harley Quinn. You know, I absolutely, you know, the Suicide Squad comic as a whole is I like it, but it's not one of my favorites. I think it's a good concept and everything, but the stories that I've read so far, I'm actually working through them, they never quite just sort of gel into like a great story for me. It's more like a sort of like a fun thing watching this team. And I really wanted to, you know, see this film, and then this week I was crestfallen, because on Tuesday and Wednesday the reviews start from the media started to pour in, and they were so bad. You know, across the board, they were basically, this film was being, you know, absolutely slated and everything. And the one, you know, the one thing throughout all this that was sort of almost like a shining angel on the battlefield of a sum was if anyone ever sort of listens to, watches, Collider YouTube show, there's a young lady on there, called Sasha, who is basically a sort of, you know, one of the presenters in there. And she was basically sort of saying, you know, don't ignore all the haters. I went to see Suicide Squad and it was awesome and everything. And then some of the Collider lot, when they went to see it, they were sort of saying that they enjoyed it as well. So I was sort of a bit more hyped going into it. I was still like, you know, these reviews and everything were sort of like, you know, really, really sort of getting me down. But when I went to see it, at midnight, and I've got to say, I really, really enjoyed the film. You know, I absolutely loved it. It wasn't a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination, but there was a lot of issues with it, mainly to do with the story, which I'll get to in a moment. But for a film like this, what I was really, really looking forward to was basically the interaction with the characters. You know, with Deadshot, with Harley, you know, what the Joker was going to be like, and also like that. And that is basically the stuff that was like really, really fun in this film. The actual sort of, you know, their interaction and everything in these characters, and sort of basically just hanging out with the squad themselves and everything. And that's what I really, 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 really enjoyed about this film. It was, you know, just, I just had so much fun. I really got into the characters. Jared Leto was a great Joker, you know. He was one of those guys that you really wish you could have been in there a lot more. I'll go to this, you know, this bit straight away, because this is something that was sort of one of the peeves of the film. You had two great villains in this film. You had the Joker, and you had Amanda Waller. Unfortunately, neither of those two were the main villain in the film. The main villain in the film was the Enchantress, and it was kind of, she was okay, but she was basically just like, she was just basically this character who basically wanted to destroy the world. You didn't really get much motivation for her. There wasn't a lot of personality there. She was just this sort of like, you know, it was your typical sort of superhero, villain that basically, It reminded me a bit actually of Doctor Doom in the Fantastic Four, where basically at the end, where basically it just creates this massive like sort of big lightning vortex in the sky that's basically going to destroy the world. And it was sort of, there was no sort of, you didn't get a real sense of her plan or what she was trying to accomplish or how this was going to destroy the world. It was just basically just like this big MacGuffin there. And that kind of brought it down somewhat, especially because, you know, Amanda Waller, I mean, she was great in this film. And I think there's a lot that they can build on this when they do, you know, because there's going to be a Suicide Squad 2, you know, but that's, you know, because this film, you know, despite the reviews, it's going to make money. And also, you know, there's going to be a Harley Quinn film of some sort. She would make a great actual villain, you know, if she basically, you know, turns on the squad itself. There's so much potential. She was so... a lot more evil than in the comics. In the comics, she's always kind of like a bitch. But in this one, there was like a real dark, evil side to her. And again, the Joker, it wasn't so much a cameo, but more of a subplot. It was in it. But you kind of, I personally, and this is quite divisive, I personally would have loved to have seen more of the Joker. You know, and again, I think going forward, in another movie, they could basically, you know, that role needs to be expanded, you know, but they need to be like, you know, a villain of that magnitude. And again, this is, you know, a problem with film. I don't know if this is because we wanted to like not have it as an R-rated film. In the UK, it's a 15. I don't know what it is in America. The henchmen were basically just these sort of, these like just disposable, weird looking, creatures, you know, it was kind of like you get in, say, Avengers or Avengers 2, where you've got basically the big, army and they're basically there just to basically do lots of moves on and just sort of like, you know, for the heroes or villains in this case, to basically just sort of like, you know, show the stuff off of wiping them out. It was kind of, you know, that I could have done with something a little more, something more to get your teeth into. In that, but it was just basically was sort of like a horde of bad guys, basically just to get mowed down. But again, the stuff that I really liked, you know, were basically, blew that in, away. And there's sort of a few gripes that really got me is that this is seen in, which was one of my favorite scenes in the film, is when they're in the bar. And if you ever watch the trailers, I think it's in the second trailer where Harley's basically serving them all drinks and they're all asking for what drink they want and stuff. That's not in the movie. that's been taken out. And that really bummed me because that was like one of my favorite scenes in the trailers. I don't know why they took it out because it would have actually lent itself so well to the actual scene itself. You know, of the fact that Harley basically sort of serving him more drinks and everything. And then Diablo, by the way, was like a real surprise because he had one of the best stories because a lot of the scenes were basically done in flashbacks. So you saw basically their sort of backstories, you know, throughout the film. And he was a really great character. You know, he was like a real surprise. He's been quite low key in the trailers and in the comics is low key. But yeah, he was like, you know, a real great, character. But in that trailer, there's a bit where he says he wants water and then Harley says, you know what, that's a good idea, honey, and stuff like that. And that wasn't in the film. So that been taken out. And there's a few of the Joker's lines as well that were sort of in the trailer, which had been cut out. So that was a bit odd. But on the whole, I really enjoy Suicide Squad. Most people who I know who have been to see Suicide Squad have actually, you know, liked it or enjoyed it, you know, so, and I'm not going to like, go on the tirade against.
See, I wish you would.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, reviewers serve a purpose. Okay, you know, reviewers really, you know, do, you know, serve a purpose. And I think most reviewers, they basically go in there and they're basically being honest about the films. But I think what you've got to sort of realize is that reviewers are basically just people who are bringing their own particular taste. And a lot of reviewers are basically very knowledgeable on films and like a certain standards of films. So sometimes when you get a film like Suicide Squad, which, I'm not going to say that, you know, reviewers are sort of snobby because if you look at, you know, reviews for films like, say, Civil War and Deadpool, most of those will be positive and stuff like that. But sometimes when I was like reading the reviews, they would basically talk about how they thought the tone was like cruel and the characters like unappealing and stuff like that. And I didn't get that from the film. And I think sometimes you will get, you know, you'll get films where basically the reviewers, they're probably not the quite the right reviewers to basically, you know, to trust. What I'm saying is trust their opinion on a film like this. Mm. And I think this is, you know, this is, I'm actually sort of thinking of doing like a piece on the whole Rotten Tomatoes thing, because I've sort of hinted before that I'm not enamored by the people who basically just throw out Rotten Tomatoes rating out there, but, you know, as basically a bat to beat a film with, also to like, you know, give an opinion on a film, because, and I'm not one of these people who like is, you know, try to do this ridiculous petition to close down Rotten Tomatoes, which we got in this week, which was absolutely ridiculous. But I think with Rotten Tomatoes, it is a very much, it's basically, it is like an aggregate score of all the, basically collate all the reviews and give an aggregate score. But what they're doing, they basically sort of look at the review and then basically give it like a, almost like a yes or no. Mm-hmm. Review. We'll basically sort of say, is it positive or is it not? And to me, I think if you're going to sort of take reviewers, what worries me about something like Rotten Tomatoes is it almost demeans the actual work of the reviewer, because you're basically sort of taking it down to that basically base level, or like good or not. And there's more to it than that. Because if you sort of read a lot of reviews for Suicide Squad, some of them were like negative, would also praise certain bits of the film. So they will praise basically the performances of like Will Smith, who incidentally was absolutely great in this. It's been a long time since I've seen a kick-ass Will Smith, but he was great in this. And will praise sort of like the banter or something like that. So if you're like basically, you know, going to choose whether you're going to see this film, you might read that review and you might think, well, those bits are the sort of things that I like in a movie, so I might check it out. But overall, the tone of the review would be negative. So I think, you know, if you're sort of serious about, you know, being taking reviews seriously, you need to basically sort of read reviews as opposed to just looking at like the actual score, and also find reviewers that you actually trust. Because I basically, a lot of the reviewers that I sort of trust are basically out like on the YouTube channels, like on Collider, on Screen Junkies, because they're basically, they have the sort of same sort of, attitude to film that I do. So I'm not saying that I agree with them all the time, but I've sort of found in there sort of like, you know, reviewers who are basically on my wavelength, as it was. And I found people like that, the high end reviewers, like somebody like Mark Kermode, who works for the BBC, who, you know, I have very different views to him on what films are good and bad, but I kind of trust his opinion because he talks sense. But when you basically just take all the reviewers in there and then just put an aggregate score, I think that's quite, in many ways, it kind of misses the point of what a review is there for, you know. So, and at the end of the day, you know, for all of us, every single one of us, we're all individuals. We all basically have different tastes, you know, and that to me is kind of why you should basically, you know, make up your own mind at the end of the day, you know, and that's basically all I can sort of say about that. Cause, you know, I went to see Suicide Squad and I really, really did enjoy it. I've got to say that if you compare it to the other superhero films out there, it doesn't touch the high end, you know, the very best of, like, say, the Marvel films. So, for this year example, it's nowhere near as good as Deadpool, nowhere near as good as Civil War or Captain America Winter Soldier. It's not as good as Guardians of the Galaxy. But to me, I think it's sort of that pack behind those, it sort of fits in really, you know, well at the head of those. Certainly better than most of the X-Men films. I've seen, you know, sort of better than Batman v Superman, you know, better than a lot of the sort of, like, you know, the average Marvel films. You know, I personally, you know, had a really, a lot to like about this film. And I frankly don't get why this film has basically done so, you know, had so much hate thrown upon it. You know, it's basically, you know, for my personal view, I went to see this film, really enjoyed it, and I would definitely go see it again. And I want to see more from this, because I think there's so much potential from this. For me, I want to see after this, the rumours are that there's basically going to be a Harley Quinn based film of some sort, which, you know, to me, I personally would like to see a Harley Quinn Joker movie. Of the two of them, almost like a Bonnie and Clyde type mm-hmm. thing. Another story where basically Harley, because there was a few scenes in this film where you sort of saw, even though that she was basically, a complete lunatic in this film. And there's also a couple of, I won't give out a spoiler as such, but there's basically, at the start, when each character's introduced, they kind of do like a, so it's almost like a scorecard of them, but basically sort of like, throws up and shows several sort of, their characteristics. And hers disappeared really, really quick. And I noticed something that said murder on it, and it disappeared for me too quick. If you're going to go see it, just keep a lookout for that, because there's something really, really interesting on that scene. So keep a lookout for that. But basically, I personally would like to see a joke Harley Quinn movie where Harley Quinn starts to try and pull herself away from the Joker and cause a conflict, and then lead into like a second Suicide Squad film, you know, because I really want to see, you know, a lot more from these. Again, there was a slight disappointment because I really wanted this to be as good as, say, Deadpool. As it were, Deadpool got like a really good story and a really good character, you know, development in there and great humor. It didn't quite reach those levels, but I would love to see more because I think there's a lot more, you know, that we can get out of this film.
Okay. Obviously, to sort of go back to the Rotten Tomatoes thing, it's like, for me especially, I, you know, this movie I was either hoping would be really good or really bad, so it can be kind of a, I guess, even though they've sort of righted the ship already, especially with Geoff Johns in charge now, but it was like, you kind of hope that that's, at least from my perspective, that this film would have done poorly so that they can kind of like right the ship. And obviously when we saw the results from Batman vs. Superman, there was several people who said it wasn't a good movie, and there was scuttlebutt inside the company that they were thinking about reshooting some things to make the movie a lot more lighthearted, because a big criticism of the Batman vs. Superman was such a dark tone. So you kind of, with that, you think, oh, well, then maybe they managed to salvage this movie, if it was bad, and make it into a fairly decent film. And like I said, to me, I think it's not really that people rely so much on Rotten Tomatoes like it's a religion, but it's just so much that it's just objective. Like, it's just, it approaches it to like a scientific approach to where, okay, you could say there are people that are biased out there, but they're sort of negated by the people who probably be favorable to the review. So what you wind up having is sort of a, I guess, a good indicator of what the film would be to an objective person. But just like you said earlier, Dazza, you know, it's all subjective. Obviously, when you're there as a professional critic, you're there trying to watch it objectively. But at the same time, you're gonna like certain things. Things are gonna appeal to you certain ways that maybe most people might necessarily care for. This movie may have not been good for someone like you, who's obviously grown accustomed to the Suicide Squad or the superhero movies. So maybe someone's watching this just as a film goer and thinking, well, maybe the average film goer won't like this film. And really, when you think about it, they're trying to write for the biggest audience possible. So when they're doing the review, they're not keeping people like you and to a degree like me in mind. So that's why when I do see scores like that, it's not, and it's also, I don't take it like gossipable, but at the same time, it's a film I was already on the fence on. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. The trailers were good, but the problem is they kept showing trailers and they were all good. And more often than not, it was the same footage. And I was like, okay, that's great and all, but give us something new. Obviously the footage you're showing us is great, but the fact that you keep repackaging it has me worried, because it's like, well, how come we're not seeing more of the film? How come we're seeing all these great sequences, but not necessarily other things in the film that would constitute the need for a new trailer? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's one of those things to where I even you and your, I wouldn't say it's a glowing review, but you gave it a solid thumbs up. For someone like me, who's already kind of have a preconceived notion on Warner Brothers as far as making superhero films, I kind of wanted this film to knock it out of the park. And the fact that even your review says, well, it's a good movie, it has its problems, but it's a lot better than what people say. Well, then that's kind of a really bad sign, because I was like, they really needed to knock it out of the park. They really needed to correct the right the ship. Because really, up until now, it's like, well, they've had two duds. Even okay, I will say this: Batman vs. Superman, I guess for the most part is, for the most part, it's been panned by the audience. Whereas Man of Steel, sort of that 50-50. In fact, let me look that up right now on RottenTomatoes.com right now. You brought up earlier that the movie wasn't given a rated R rating. It was PG-13. So, and that was odd too, considering with now I'm not defending this. Obviously, we talked about this before in the past where I think it's a kind of a crutch to do the rated R stuff because it's like you're basing this off of a comic book. And if you read your average comic book and they're all PG-13, so I don't understand why the need to make a rated R film. And I'm sort of glad they kept with that. But at the same time, another weakness of this film is it's the Suicide Squad movie. Let's say had it been 100% faithful to the comic book. I've read issues of Suicide Squad before. It's okay, but it's a book that I don't read on a regular basis because it's just not for me. I don't like. Of all the DC groups that they could have made a film about, it's like, well, Suicide Squad would have probably been lower on my list. So that's part of the reason why I really didn't have a huge desire to see this movie. And like you said, I will watch it eventually because this is one of those things to where now I am kind of intrigued because when I saw the reviews, I just assumed it was going to be a film that was going to be universally panned. But you're not the first person I've heard said, it's actually not that bad. And considering the score gotten to Rotten Tomatoes is not necessarily fair. But then also I think that goes into the Rotten Tomatoes scoring system is when you're reviewing this film, you're not considering that Rotten Tomatoes score. You're just, is this a good film or is it not? And I know often some reviewers, they review on a scale. So the idea, it's like, well then, all the critics didn't sit in a room and say, well, let's think of a number. No, they all thought independently. And once you scored all their reviews side by side, that's where you got the review. That's where you got the score of this film.
Yeah. All the reviewers, I'm pretty much sure that most reviewers are basically honest, you know, professional people. You know, some, I think, do have biases, against certain films and stuff like that. I do sometimes find it rather strange that you will get a reviewer who will basically sort of review all films that come out. For example, I mean, like a Roger Ebert type, you know, person and stuff like that. And I guess they have to be professional, but there's certain, like, you know, reviewers I've sort of noticed who are basically, you probably would sort of, you know something about this being a horror fan. I often find when I sort of read reviews that horror gets quite a short shrift because it's not, you know, because I think, you know, horror films, for example, are a very sort of, you know, that have sort of, like, you know, a passionate, you know, fan base. I think, you know, you have to be a certain sort of fan to really be into horror. And I think if you're sort of like, you know, put off by, say, sort of like, you know, excessive violence or excessive like cruelty in a film and stuff like that, or basically, you know, just don't see it in the way of a horror fan, it's probably hard to actually sort of see merit in a movie like that, or even see merit in films that for a film genre that you're not particularly, you know, sort of, you know, as a person, like, you know, in tune with. And I think a lot of the reviews I've seen about Suicide Squad have basically, you know, taken umbrage with what they saw as sort of like, you know, the nastiness of the characters and the fact that you were sort of like, you know, these were villains and killers and everything. Like that, forgetting the fact that, you know, sort of, if you go through, you know, the sort of film that this would be based on from, like, say, the 50s and 60s and stuff, would be films like, say, the Dirty Dozen, or, you know, of films, you know, like that, where you basically had like that sort of misfit type team, and they would be sort of like, you know, sort of villains as well. So I think, you know, and to me, the actual, we said, you know, as villains, I personally didn't find them sort of like, you know, offensive as characters. You know, but that is just sort of me, but I can see how some reviewers sort of, you know, you'll be. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, you should really make up you know, your own mind. I've never basically been put off. If I ever wanted to go see a film, bad reviews have never put me off going to see that film.
Yeah, but also if you're like me, who's on the fence, and you see yes. these reviews, that's enough for me to not see a film.
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say as well. There have been some, you know, because I go to the cinema, you know, a hell of a lot, and sometimes I don't actually go necessarily because I want to see a particular film. I'll just go there on my way home from work, or I'll see a film. Like I actually did with Suicide Squad the other day. I actually saw, you know, because it was a midnight showing. And so I went over to the place early and basically got something to eat. And I actually saw two films while I was waiting to see Suicide Squad. Mm. You know, that's the sort of film guy I am. And what I'm saying is that I was, you know, for example, there was a film called Criminal not so long ago. And that would be a film that if I was basically just passing the cinema or in the area, I'd probably go and see. But the reviews were so bad, it put me off. You know, seeing it, you know, but like say, you know, at the end of the day, as a film, if I want to go see a film, I will go and see that film. And conversely, if there's a film that I'm not particularly really like the look of, even if the reviews are really, really, great, you know, chances are I probably, you know, won't necessarily go to see it. And that was the Revenant. You know, I basically, as a film fan, I probably should have seen that film because it got such good reviews. But it was one of those films that I just couldn't bring myself to go see it because I just didn't like the look of the film. You know, the sort of, you know, the darkness and the, you know, the wet and the cold and everything like that. And at the time when it was out, I just couldn't bear to go see that. Even though it was basically, I'm sure on Rotten Tomatoes, it's like a 98, 99, 100 score or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I basically couldn't, it works both ways with me. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sort of, you know, and it sort of paid off for me because I've seen, there's lots of films I've seen which got sort of like, you know, really, really, you know, bad reviews, which I have loved and conversed with. There's lots of films which were my absolute sort of darlings as films and I basically, you know, really hated. So, you know, it goes both ways. But moving back to, you know, Suicide Squad briefly, you know, just to give my rating on it, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay, not
you
bad.
Know, just basically, and again, this isn't, When I give ratings, I don't actually rate it on what the quality of the film is. I'm basically rating it as what it sort of meant to me personally as a viewer. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm going on. So from my experience and my enjoyment of a film, I gave it, you know, 4 out of 5 because I can see massive things wrong with the film. You know, like I say, you know, the story was sort of, you know, was sort of weak and, you know, everything, and it was very generic at the end with the although the battle scenes at the end were fun, even though there was some like really dodgy looking CGI, even though the battle scenes were fun, the actual how we have to beat the bad guy was basically very sort of, you know not very particularly inspiring, but you know, but for a you know, for a film, I mean, just to go back as well to the rating business. So I don't know how it rates in the, in America, but in the UK, we kind of have sort of like the, we have basically like the PG-13, we have the 15 rating, and then we have the 18 rating. And, basically this got the 15 rating. I'm not saying I would have wanted it to be like an R type film, but if you have a film where basically there is a lot of sort of characters who basically are, if there's a lot of characters and scenes which basically are revolving with guns, I would have preferred maybe a bit of a higher rating so you could have just got a bit more sort of, you know, action in there. Because I think the reason why they had these sort of like weird sort of weird bubbly creatures as sort of the ones to be shot up is because it basically, it's a lot easier to basically get a film through the sensors, you know, get a rating if you basically are shooting like sort of monsters and robots and aliens and that sort of thing, as opposed to basically shooting like actual, like, you know, living, breathing human beings. And I think with that much gun thing, I would have preferred basically maybe a sort of, just a little bit more of a bloodshed type film, you know, sort of, you know, going on the sort of like, you know, the Deadpool type sort of film. But, you know, but that's just, you know, that's just me.
Okay. All right, I feel like we both made our cases. With that said, what you've your review got me inspired enough to maybe watch the movie, but maybe pay for another movie and then sneak into Suicide Squad just in case it's bad.
Yeah, I mean the thing is, it's not. This is a film which is very much in. I can imagine a lot of people not liking it. You know, I can't really describe this, but it's just like I think that people's views are going to really. This is a film like say Guardians of the Galaxy, where I came out of that thinking everyone's going to love this film. This was a film that I basically sort of like really enjoyed, but I can see how the story of it or lack of and certain things would basically mean that some people would not, you know, like it. I'm not going to go out there and say that this is a must-see film either. But, you know, but to me, you know, it's a film that I will go and see this film again at some point, you know, because I really did, enjoy it. But it's, I will, over reviews, over, I think it's been like unfairly panned with this sort of, and surprised how universally it's been hated. You know, some of the reviews I think are sort of fair on the sort of, what you're expecting from a film is basically a well-rounded, you know, story. You know, I basically just saw it as like a really fun film set around a load of really fun characters, you know, doing a load of stuff. And that to me was, you know, was fine for that. And I had a real lot of fun, you know, with this movie. I have to say, I basically when the lights came on in the cinema, I sort of like turned around and looked around at the audience. And you can normally get like a bit of a feel, like a buzz of how people say it. I got to admit, a lot of people I looked at did not look like they were enthralled with what they'd just seen. I don't know if it's because it was like, you know, half two in the morning when it finished or anything like that. But I was sort of expecting to turn around and seeing loads of people sort of all like, yeah, that was great. And there were some like that. But there was a hell of a lot of people who just had like a subdued kind of look to them, you know? So, you know, but I personally, if I'm with the minority that enjoy this film, I'm happy with that because I really did enjoy this film.
Okay. Since we're talking all things film, let's go into our next segment, Rate and Slate.
Now, obviously, you missed something.
Did I miss something? Oh, you're right. I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? I was just so enthralled with the film discussion. I thought, oh, let's go into our movie discussion. No, in fact, another aspect of the show is television, which I clearly have forgotten. Now, what are we talking next, Dazza?
Preacher.
Yeah,
because last week we had the final episode of the Preacher TV series, which was something I've been waiting for like years and years and years. Because Preacher is my favorite comic of all time, and so I've been really looking forward to this TV show. And I thought we'd wait until the entire season was over so I could give my views as a Preacher fan. And the problem is with a TV show, that when you're sort of so much of a big fan of something, you can basically watch a film or TV show in two ways. You can basically be totally nitpicky and saying, oh, this is bad because they've not done this like the comic, and be like, you know, that, and sort of, and maybe sort of like, every time that they basically go in a different direction, you can be sort of like, you know, sort of, oh no, in the comic it's like this, and they, you know, or at the same time, you can go the other way, in which you are so happy that your favorite comic book or whatever has been made into it, and you're going to see this on the TV show, that basically you are kind of sort of just enjoying the fact that you're seeing these characters come to life, and that you're basically sort of, you know, just totally forgetting about any sort of new problem with it or anything like that. You're just, you know, enjoying the ride. And I've kind of gone into the second camp, maybe, particularly at the start of this series. Basically, just to sort of set up how I've sort of, you know, view this TV show. It's basically not a straight adaptation of the Preacher story.
No kidding.
They've taken the general storyline of Preacher, and they've taken the three main characters, and they've kind of created a different way of telling the story. So where is the first, in the comic, they basically sort of, you know, it's pretty much like, you know, for the whole 60 odd issues, it's pretty much a road trip through America. This one, everything was basically based in, one sort of, in one town, which is probably done for sort of like, you know, cost reasons and stuff like that. And what they've also done as well, they've taken like elements throughout the comic. The comics, you know, life as it was, and then brought them into like this first season. So they basically brought things, you know, together. And with the characters, they basically, the characters are kind of recognizable as the ones in the comic, but they've given their very different backstory. The relationship between the characters is very, very different. And the basically sort of, you know, so you've got the basics of Custer, Cassidy and Tulip. It's very much recognizable on there, but they've gone into, done totally different things with them. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, and I was really fine with this because I got my preacher. I got the elements, on there, but everything was fresh to me, for watching me, because they did something it was almost like an alternative universe of Preacher. So I was basically getting the Preacher story, but I was getting something that was basically surprising me at the same time and giving me more intrigue with the sort of the backstories and everything. And also there were these little hints that would come up in the season that basically, which were basically sort of almost teasers to what could come later on, which I absolutely love. So, there's basically a very brief glimpse of a character star. There's a little reference at one point when Cassidy and Custer are talking about who taught, Custer to fight when he was a kid, and Custer kind of brushed it off. But I, as a fan, I basically sort of recognize that from the comic. That's a reference to Jody, the guy who basically shot, Custer's dad when he was a kid, and also to Jody's grandmother, who basically sort of, you know, kidnapped him as a kid as well and brought him up. So as well as little references there. The first episode, the pilot as such, absolutely knocked it out of the park. I absolutely loved, and I absolutely, you know, because again, it was these characters who I knew, but doing something a little bit different with them. And I thought, you know, this series is going to be great. And I felt that for the first few episodes and stuff, especially because Jesse, basically, when he gets this power, he basically starts experimenting with power. And he almost becomes like a bit of like a cowboy vigilante. He's basically going through the town, basically sort of like, righting wrongs and basically sort of, you know, sorting people out and that sort of thing. So I was like really loving this. And then the season really started to slog. And I was still enjoying it, but it was the thing. I go back to me being a Preacher fan. I was basically a lot more patient with it than I would be if I was watching another TV show that I wasn't invested in. It got really, really slow. Nah. And it picked up in the last couple of episodes, and the last episode ended on an absolute high, you know, the I really love the last episode, but it was a slog. And I think a few other things that basically were different to the comic is the tone was very, very grim throughout. Now, in the first episode, there was a lot of fun to be had. There was a lot of humor and stuff. And I thought, you know, this was more of a balance, but for the, it was a very grim tone for the rest of the season. And it basically reminded me a bit of sort of like Walking Dead. You know, that heavy sort of like, everyone sort of scowling and stuff like that. And it lacked what the comic did in the comic. And it did have humor, but in the comic, it would have basically this sort of like, you know, this lighthearted humor and these funny reactions. Even the villains would have funny, you know, bits in there. And in this one, it just, you know, that humor didn't come out. And it was sort of like, you know, there were a lot of storylines which were just like really, really heavy. And one of the things as well is that the characters, even though they were sort of, like I said, they were recognizable as Tulip and Jesse and Cassidy, none of them were likable.
Really? You know? Not even on any level? Like, obviously, it's that Garth Ennis, so it's that mean-spirited humor?
No, not even. There was sort of, I mean, there was like the You got basically like Tulip was a kick-ass character. You got Cassidy being a drunk and everything, like, and basically being a drug addict and stuff like that, and over the top. But they weren't likable. You know, they were basically. I sort of started to realize that I didn't really care for these characters at all. And in the case of Jesse, he was really, did some really bad stuff in there. That you basically at the start he was like it was kind of like a miserable character, but he was also a kick-ass because basically, and the point is in this, he was basically stuck in a job doing something that he hated in a town that he didn't particularly like. But it was sort of, you got that. But there was just no levity to it. It was just like really, really heavy. And like I said, the characters I didn't like. In the comic, they are basically, they're all flawed characters. I mean, Tulips, like, can be like, a miserable, Cassidy can basically be sort of, is the kind of friend that you would have will basically just sort of drive you nuts that you like, but would just be a complete screw up. Jesse, the same, he would basically be like, a stick in the mud and stuff like that. But the thing that was sort of like, that really endeared you to them is that they basically, they were like a family unit, a dysfunctional one, but they cared about each other. And you could sort of sense that the love that they had for each other, even though they drove each other nuts and stuff. And they had basically, there used to be these heartwarming moments in the comic where they would basically just sort of talk. And just talk about like, pop culture and stuff. We'll talk about movies and stuff. And that actually, in the final episode, you actually started to get a glimpse of that. Cause there's one scene where they're in and it was one of a scene where I thought, this is starting to feel, like what I want Preacher to be, where they were basically just in like a diner and they're arguing about the Big Lebowski. And like, and Cassidy hates it, Tulip loves it and stuff. And then they basically, and it was like, They just had that sort of like, that bond about them that I sort of liked. And at the end, it was almost in some ways, as if the first season was almost like an extended prologue to the actual what was coming next. Because where they sort of like left off after 10 episodes, and to be perfectly honest, I have to say that for a season of 10 episodes to basically drag, That's not a good sign. 10 episodes, you should basically be able to sort of, keep a good momentum in that. And there were several, like, particularly towards the latter end, about, well, there was about like 3 episodes where nothing really, really happened. It felt like you just get a few little things throughout the season, throughout the episodes. But yeah, it was almost like where you are at the end of the, episode 10, at the end of the season, is almost where you are at around issue 5 of the comic. And at first I was fine with it sort of being slow. I thought, well, we're just basically sort of like, they're sort of exploring Jesse and his new power and everything, and they're sort of going to take the time with it. But to me, they took it too long. But the like I said, the last episode really knocked it out of the park for me. It basically, and it really set up for, it got me excited for season 2 because it basically almost started like the road trip that the Preacher comic was based on as a whole. But it just sort of, I really hope that when they actually sort of do season 2, that we get more of the lighthearted moments and more of the camaraderie and stuff. And we sort of, get to actually like the characters, they don't have to be sort of, totally 100%, likable, but you've got to basically sort of, like them. It's a bit like, if you watch Quentin Tarantino film. Mm-hmm. There's characters in there which are bad people, but they'll have that sort of that charisma about them that you can't help basically, liking them and taking a like to them and caring about what happens to them. In Preacher, like I say, it became such a slog that I didn't actually like these people. Which was sort of, a disappointment for me. So it's, and I have to say as well that when this season started, I was telling people, get ready for, Preacher, because this could be awesome. This could be like, this could be like your Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. sort of thing, like a show that you're really, really going to love. And I have to say that after watching the first season, I can't, and I have to say most, there's very few people who I know who are watching Preacher. you know, very few at all who have taken to the series. And I have to say, I could not basically go back and say to people, you've really, really missed something with Preacher, because I don't think they have. I think I've been really patient with it because I love the comic so much and stuff. If I was basically, you know, not, I think this might have been a series that I would basically have drifted off. You know, it's been enough on me, you know, that I've, you know, some of the stuff in there that I've really, really enjoyed. But as a whole, I really think hope they do better in the next season. Like I say, this season has almost been sort of a setting up for the actual, you know, what's going to be the crux of the series, you know. And they have got a second season, so hopefully, you know, they will, you know, get things going. But, you know, it's been a mixed bag for me. I would say I was sort of, it's a series that I've sort of hated or anything like that. But it's not blown me away the way I really wanted it to.
Do you think part of that is because obviously them spending so much time in that town, but is it, do you think it's because of the budget? Like a show like that, if you were to do it religiously, like the book, if it was a perfect adaptation, that it would cost too much? Cause that's always what I think of whenever I see these superhero movies or TV shows. They're very expensive to produce, and to produce 100% adaptation, it would cost too much. It wouldn't be profitable?
Not really, because the stuff that I really loved about Preacher was stuff like the dialogue, mm-hmm. and the, you know, and the gross out humor at times and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that's going to cost you a lot. And to be honest, the stuff, if you have actually read Preacher, even though you've got sort of stuff like angels and stuff like that in there, it wasn't intricate. It wasn't necessary to put that onto the screen, you know. I mean, they actually worked for it. And to be perfectly honest, one of the really successful things they did, because in the comic, they have basically angels and stuff like that, you know, and stuff. And they have those angels in the comic, but they basically sort of like, they changed the nature of them, and they actually changed it for the better. Because and one of my favorite parts of this season was there was two angel characters that basically come after Jesse. And that was actually one of my favorite parts of it. And there wasn't any special effects needed, because they basically had them as angels in basically disguised as humans. And what they did with that, the two guys who were playing those really did well with that. So in respect, I don't think the budget really hurt it, because if you read Preacher, it's not something that you really need a great deal of budget for. You know, frankly, your main badass character is basically a Western cowboy with two Colt. You know, you don't need to have, you know, big special effects, you know, to do that. I agree with you that it basically trying to put superheroes onto a TV budget can be sort of quite, you know, thing. But in Preacher, you know, what I wanted to see out of it was basically the characters and the dialogue and everything like that, and the sort of, you know, just throw in like some car chases, scenes and stuff like that. And basically I'd be fine with that. So it's not really the budget. The only thing about the budget is that it's, Preacher, you know, one of the things about Preacher was basically the road trip element, because they go to New York, they go to New Orleans, they go to the Nevada desert and, you know, Texas and all these places. So that obviously they've sort of had to sort of like, you know, put that on hold for now. But I was sort of, you know, I think, you know, even without that, I should have basically sort of, you know, the budget, I don't think has basically affected my enjoyment of it, because I don't think you needed a big budget to basically make Preacher, you know, apart from the sort of the locations, I don't think you needed a big budget to make Preacher work.
Okay. Yeah, that was always my thing with. I'd never finished reading Preacher, but I read, I think, the first volume. I thought it was good. It was fine. And obviously, you're not my only friend that likes Preacher, but when I heard people like you and my other friends talk about Preacher not being too gung-ho, I was like, well, maybe I don't need to watch it. And if it gets better later, maybe I'll watch it. But with that said, it's like, well, for someone who didn't even finish Preacher, it's like, well, I don't know if the Preacher show's for me then.
Yeah, it's not a series that I would say go out of your way to watch. personally. And it pains me to sort of say that, the season, it didn't really have to be like the comic. Because there are some seasons where some things where I would say that even if you're not a comic fan or something, you watch this and you're enjoying sort of thing. Preacher, it's kind of just, for me, it's kind of like, it's just a series that I enjoy because, and it reminds me of the comic and stuff like that. But it's not, it's not something that I would basically say, a must watch TV show. It's not like the, I'm just trying to think of an example. It's not like, The Shield. And when I say The Shield, I don't mean Agents of Shield. I mean The Shield, the cop drama.
Yeah.
Or Friday Night Lights. They're series that I would say, you have to watch. Preacher, is basically not one of them.
Okay. Let's stop talking all things, contemporary, and let's jump into Wayback Machine, and let's talk Rate and Slate for the year of 1985. Obviously, these top 10 numbers are from TKO170.com. These are the top 10 performing films in 1985. At number 10, we have The Goonies. Number 9, Witness. Number 8, Jewel of the Nile. Number 7, Cocoon. Number 6, The Color Purple. Number 5, A View to Kill. Number 4, Out of Africa. Number 3, Rambo, First Blood, Part 2. Number 2, Rocky 4. And at number 1, Back to the Future. I can already tell from looking at this list. Now, I don't know for sure, but I think I know what you're going to pick for your slate.
Okay, we will have to see.
All right, since we have the top 10 films, what would be your rate for 1985?
My rate for 1985, and to be quite frank, it's not going to be one which is going to blow people away or sort of like, be a big shocker. It's basically going to be Back to the Future.
Not a shocker.
Not a shocker. I've got to say, I actually think this is a poor list, frankly, of that, so, for that year. And I have to say, out of this list, that's probably, well, actually, no, that's not fair, because I really like The Color Purple, but I would say Back to the Future is probably the only one on this list, maybe during the Nile, that I would basically watch again. If it's on TV, I would say, I sit back and watch this. There's the rest that I kind of can't sort of, at the best, take or leave. But, Back to the Future. Again, this goes back to what I've been saying, like in previous weeks when we go back to these lists, is you look back and there's just these like really creative films that were being made, and just sort of, and blockbuster films were, Back to the Future, it's an original film made for, it's not adapted from a comic or a book or remade from something else. It's basically a film made, a really imaginative film made for the screen. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, and you don't get that much these days, but, Back to the Future, absolutely love the film. It's one of those things that as soon as you it's mentioned Back to the Future, you immediately hear Huey Lewis and the News. it's got that iconic, music to it and everything. And yeah, I absolutely love Back to the Future. That's actually one of these films that if that was made today, within a few months of it being made, you would have had people screaming out, saying that this film was going to be a complete disaster.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm talking in the actual, the making, of the film, because just after they started making this film, they basically went back and did the dreaded reshoots. That basically sort of like, really freak people out because, they changed the lead actor.
Oh, that's right. I've heard about this now.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember who it was. It was, Eric Stoltz.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so basically they basically got Eric Stoltz in, and they actually filmed quite a bit of the film with him in it, and it just was not working. You know, so they went back, they got Michael J. Fox. So I don't think he was actually I don't think he was even like a big star at this, but he wasn't a big film star because he was on a TV show called Family Ties.
Yeah, I was like, that may have been his claim to fame at the time.
I don't think he'd been in any sort of, it's still not been any like big, you know, big budget or carried a film on his own or anything. And so he was basically, you know, they changed the actors and he basically went in and they like reshot loads of the scenes of him and Eric Stoltz. I have heard, I don't know if it's true, but in certain like long distance scenes, it's actually Eric Stoltz in there. I think there's some footage where he's running away from the Libyans and stuff. I think which is actually, you know, him. But yeah, a lot of the, you know, they actually went back and basically, you know, reshot, you know, tons of the film. But yeah, I love Back to the Future and I love the second one as well. I think the second one is so imaginative how they actually tie in the second film into the first one.
That was really cool, yeah.
Yeah, so we basically got, and it actually works as well. It actually works, but they basically managed to get it. So you've almost got like two films happening at the same time. Mm. You know, so yeah, I love Back to the Future. Can't say enough good things about it. And, because it was the anniversary of last year. Mm. And I just happened to basically, you know, with all the thing, I happened to watch it because we're showing it on one of the channels. And I think it still holds up today.
I don't doubt that, yeah. Obviously, yeah. Aspects of Part 2 don't hold up particularly well. But with that said, Part 1 is an instant classic and it really holds up to this day.
Yeah. But yeah, Back to the Future, that was a, that would be my pick to sort of, you know, that's one of these films that I think, you know, in future, I think it's a film that basically is never really going to die out. It's a film that basically, you know, people can basically show to kids. And again, it's that thing that we keep talking about. This is like what we've been calling, like, you know, a family movie. Where it was basically, I watched it when I was a sort of like a young teenager, but it's also a film back in the days when we used to like rent a video and watch as a family that, you know, the adults can watch and enjoy as well. Mm. Even, you know, not just people, adults who have grown up with the movie. I think if this film was made today, it would be something that adults and kids could watch together and just sort of, you know, all family enjoy. And I think that, you know, there's less and less of those films nowadays.
Yeah, more often than not, you'll have a movie that pander one aspect of the audience. They'll make films predominantly just for adults, or if they make a movie with children in mind, they'll completely dismiss the adults that are probably taking them to see the movie. Okay. So, actually, this is going to transition perfect because now we're going to move on to my rate, but I think it's also going to move into your slate.
Okay.
I'm going to go with number 2, Rocky IV.
Okay, go on, man.
I mean, I love this film. Obviously, it doesn't have the artistic integrity of the first couple of films. But with that said, it's such a fun time. It's one of these films that you can kind of... Now, obviously, I think I can already hear Daz already just grinding his teeth. It's one of those things to where you can kind of just take your brain out and just have a good time. It's basically a pro wrestling movie. It's like, if you overthink it, if you're expecting some artistic... You know, integrity, you're not going to get it here. This is just a big blockbuster movie. But you know what? With that said, it's a classic. Everything about this film, there's so many quotes that I could obviously quote right now. The soundtrack is phenomenal. And obviously.
What quotes can you use in this film?
If he dies, he dies.
What quotes can you use in this film?
Hey, people.
So dialogue for about an hour of it.
People can change, Daz, okay?
Oh, yeah.
it's got so many great songs. So I was like, Daz, how could you? I know you're not a big fan of the film. Obviously, we talk off air on Facebook chat, and then obviously we've Skyped before. And I know you're no big fan of the film. And even, a friend of mine, a mutual friend of our Dave, has he called you a communist, or is he just completely questioned your legitimacy of your film taste?
He's called me a lot of things.
Now, obviously, I understand where you're coming from with this kind of film. You're so used to the other films that are sort of these well-told stories. And obviously, they're not the big-budgeted films. Obviously, to a degree with Part 3. But for the most part, they have some artistic integrity. They're these great stories. They're these great films. And I could see why, especially I think the first one won Best Picture or was nominated for Best Picture. Obviously, this one wasn't. But sort of like what you were talking about earlier, it's like one of those films to where maybe it was panned by critics at the time, but it's one of those things where it's sort of like a guilty pleasure. I can sort of watch it and have a lot of people agree with me. It's a good film. It's not a film that, you know, you're gonna study in film school, but at the same time, it's like if it's on TV and a bunch of friends are over, you're gonna have a good time. Does that transition into your slate as well? Or are you
it may do. Okay. So, why don't you ask me?
Dazza, what is your slate for 1985?
My slate for 1985 is Rocky IV.
I knew it!
I just have a real issue with this film. And I think part of it is because when I started listening to podcasts and the talk of Rocky IV would come up. It always shocked me when people would talk about this as being their favorite Rocky film. And the fact that people have so much, like you, enjoyment of this film.
It's dumb fun.
I don't even think it's fun.
Okay.
Here's my, first of all.
This is coming from the guy who likes Suicide Squad. Now, obviously, I'm not ripping on you for that, but it's like, you can't appreciate this film after what you said about Suicide Squad. It's like, of all people, I thought you would be the most understanding.
No, and listen, a total disclaimer. There are tons of films out there that I sort of have watched and, you know, just taken as being really, really, you know, dumb fun. And some like real, like, you know, almost turkeys, but just sort of having like, you know, just films that I've sort of really enjoyed. This,
hey guys.
I just can't.
Melissa?
Hold on. Sorry. I was clicking on something. Sorry about that.
Okay, you're watching porn.
Yeah, no.
Okay, here's the deal. Okay, first of all, Rocky IV is basically pretty. It's a really lazy film. It's basically the story of Rocky III, but just with a bunch of music videos throughout it. Yeah, it's just lazily retells Rocky III. It's basically the same story. There's an indestructible mega machine boxer, you know, comes on the horizon. Mm-hmm. There's a fight between a good guy boxer and this bad guy boxer at the start where the good guy boxer loses. Somebody important to Rocky dies at the start. In Rocky III, it's Mickey. In Rocky IV, it's Apollo. There's basically going to be a big fight between the two later on. There's a bunch of training montages, and then you get the big fight at the end, and Rocky wins. It's led out the same thing. The difference is in Rocky III, there was more of a story, and I think this is what gets me is that there's so little story in Rocky IV. And the thing is, if this was like a straight to video Jean-Claude Van Damme film, I'd be fine with that. But this is a Rocky film. And I expect, you know, like you said, the first Rocky film was basically, you know, it won an Oscar for Best Picture. So I expect better. I realize that as films go on, they sort of go in different, you know, the movies go in different directions, like say Fast and the Furious that started off as sort of like a low key sort of car heist movie and then became this like really extravagant sort of, you know, incredible, totally over the top action film. But, you know, this, like I say, this one, it basically takes everything that was sort of good about the Rocky films and sort of almost does a parody of them. I mean, for example, what I'm sort of pointing out here is like, you know, the overuse of music videos and the overuse of the training scenes. In the other Rocky films, basically during the training, you know, films, which is basically what the bulk of them used to be. During those training films, there would be a story with Rocky, you know, where he basically, but he, and stuff he had to overcome. So in the first one, he's basically, you know, the story his is basically sort of trying to, you know, get together with Adrian and stuff like that. And basically sort of, you know, work through his sort of his own personal issues. And in Rocky II, he almost loses Adrian. You know, she goes into a coma and he's having to, you know, basically sort of, and he's basically, his heart's not in it. In the training, so he has to overcome all that. In Rocky III, he basically loses all his confidence, because he finds out that he's basically been fed a load of bums in his sort of like world title defenses. So he basically he has to overcome all of that. And so what you get with those films is that when you get to a training montage, the training montage serves a purpose. It basically shows the victory that Rocky's had in overcoming all of that and that he's ready and everything. In Rocky IV, it basically, from Apollo dying, all you basically get to the actual fight is just training montages. You basically just get a training montage showing Rocky training and Drago training. Then you get a 30-second scene where Adrian comes over to Russia to meet up with Rocky. And then it goes into another training montage, which is doing exactly the same sort of thing. It's, you know, and it, earlier on, there's even another, like, music video where basically Rocky gets in the car and just starts thinking.
Yeah!
What is the point of that?
To be amazing, Dazza.
It's just like, you know, all these like images flashing up of the previous films with sort of Sylvester Stallone looking all sullen and everything, and just driving down, you know, driving down the road, and even get the fade out. You play the entire song. I just, you know,
it's a great song, Dazza.
But it just boggled, you know, there's absolutely nothing going on in this film. The actual motivation in this film is that, you know, that Apollo dies in an actual sporting contest with this Russian. So so basically to make everything right, Rocky's going to beat him in a sporting contest. You know, so what? So that Apollo can go to boxing Valhalla and everything. If Rocky's out for revenge, the guy should be fighting is that bloody referee who didn't stop the fight quick enough. You know, it's just, there's just absolutely nothing in the film. There's something that I really have to go on about with Rocky IV is that I've heard some people say that the fight scene at the end is like the greatest fight scene in cinema history. No way. It's not the best fight scene in the Rocky series because, you know, Rocky II, the fight in the Rocky film, which is obviously, you know, the big finale and everything. Again, that's just a music video. In the other Rocky films, they use music to sort of set the tone and tell the story. Like we talked about this a few weeks back with Rocky II, how basically the way the fight is going is basically mirrored by the actual music, and they use slow motion techniques at certain points, and they use sort of like, you know, this, when Rocky starts to fight back, they basically sort of do like almost a triumphant music, and there's all these shots showing the, like, you know, Rocky's wife and Apollo's wife in the corners, and there's all this dramatic stuff going on that sort of, you know, emphasizes it. In Rocky IV, all it does is it just plays the theme music, which I think is the same theme music that they do for one of the training montages, and they're just showing Apollo hit Drago, and then Drago hit Apollo, and Rocky, and then Rocky hits Drago, and Drago hits him back, and it's just boring. There's no story to that fight at all. It's just them two hitting each other with the music and the rounds things going up. It's just, you know, and there's no story to the actual fight. At least in, like, say, Rocky III, there's the story in that Rocky uses his sort of, his intelligence to be, you know, his savvy to be, you know, cause he knows that, the Club Lang character is a, you know, a better fighter and stronger, more powerful. So he uses his boxing smarts to basically wear him out and let him tire himself out before he starts fighting back. Rocky IV, there's nothing. They just keep hitting each other until, it goes to the final round, and then eventually Drago basically gets knocked out. There's no story to that. There's a bit, the fight at the start of Rocky IV between Apollo and Drago, to me, is a better fight because it's more dramatic and there's more going on in there. And there's actually sort of more stuff going on with the fact that, that basically all the people at ringside are basically sort of, you know, at the start, they basically sort of support. Oh, and by the way, there's another music video when Apollo goes to the ring, because you've got James Brown doing like singing the entire song of Living in America.
Yeah.
Which I have to say I am fine with, because James Brown was awesome and that song's awesome. So I'm fine with that. But again, it's another music video in the film.
I was
film.
About to say, if you hate that part, Dazza, you hate America.
I don't hate America.
I mean, you're an Englishman, you can get away with that.
But again, it's another 5 minutes of a 90-minute film given over to a music video. You know, I actually did an article on this for Half Guarded. I actually counted how much time was actually spent up on music videos in this film. I can't remember what the time was, but it was a big chunk of the entire film. So, it's just, you know, the fight scene is boring. I mean, I go back to Rocky 2 where you see Adrian at home and this year basically her face is sort of like in tears and the snot running down her face and she's sort of screaming, she's red faced and she's screaming at the TV, hit him and stuff like that. You go to Rocky 4 and she's there sat at the front row with this immaculate white suit on and she's basically at the end, she's going, you're going to do it, Rocky. It's like, it's just bullshit. It's just basically a watered down crap film. It's basically, it's just, you know, to me, it's not fun. You know, it's just tedious. And it's just basically takes, you know, it's just, and I say, it's, I go back to it. I think it's a lazy movie. It's basically a paint by numbers. We're doing a Rocky film. So we'll basically just follow the path in Rocky 3 and, you know, just put a training montage there, do some music there. And I just really think it's the worst of all the Rocky films. I think it's worse than, in many ways, Rocky 5 at least has more of a story to it.
Oh, come on. Okay. Oh. I can respect everything that you said. Now you've gone too far, Dazza.
There's more going on in Rocky 5. There's more stories going on in Rocky V because you've got the thing about the sort of, you know, the evil promoter who basically, and the sort of like, you know, the new generation of sports stars who are basically just seduced by all the money and everything like that and how the sort of the soul of the sport's being sold out. You've got the relationship between, you know, Rocky losing his son because he's taken him with, he's almost like inherited another son who he's sort of obsessed with, his son sort of, you know, trying to go his father's love. The fact that they've lost all the money so having to sort of fight the way back in that. There's more going on in Rocky. I'm not saying that Rocky 5 is particularly good, but I think there's more going on in Rocky 5. At least it doesn't end with the fight in the ring. At least it basically sort of, you know, at least as ridiculous as that whole street fight is, at least it's something different. Rocky 4, I just sort of, I mean, Jesus Christ, it runs up a mountain.
Yes, and?
There's no way he'd get up that mountain. There's no day he'd get back down again in daylight.
Rocky could go up the mountain. I mean, no, he obviously did.
Hey, I'll tell you something about Sylvester Stallone. My parents, I think I had to mention this before, but they go to a pro celebrity golf tournament in St. Andrews in Scotland every year. I used to get like a lot of big names in there, like, you know, people like Samuel L. Jackson will go and stuff like that, you know, big names. Sylvester Stallone went one year and then he refused to basically go out and play golf because it was too cold. The Scottish Air, basically.
Ah, now it's revealed why Dazza doesn't like Rocky IV.
Oh, no, it's not because of that. That's just a little sort of sub, you know, tied to it. The only, you know, about this thing, the only relationship in this film is basically, Paulie fucking a robot.
Yes, and?
Yeah, that is, when you've got a film where that is the only sort of relationship you've got that's explored at all. I mean, the best thing about this film is Apollo, Carl Weathers, and he gets killed off in the first half hour. You know, his stuff at the start where he's basically, you know, his character is interesting, how he's basically this really, really intelligent man who you find out he's actually got this prejudiced, ultra-patriotic view of the world. You know, that is quite interesting. But that all goes out the window after he's sort of killed and everything. And like I said, that initial fight is great because it's so well done and so, you know, shocking and everything. But after everything after the Drago-Apollo fight is just completely monotonous and boring to me. I loved it when I was a kid, when I saw it when I was 12. Me and a load of other kids watched it at school one time, and we actually loved it, and we cheered Rocky and everything like that. But years later, when I went back to it, I just think it's a lazy, lazy film. And what I don't get why people love it so much. If Batman v Superman had basically followed this.
Ooh, it would have been the best movie ever.
No, he wouldn't. if Batman v Superman had basically followed this way of doing those training montages and everything, it would have basically been laughed out of. People would have basically absolutely crucified it even more than what they did.
Oh, because the Wonder Woman thing was so deadly serious, Dazza.
I'm not talking about serious and fun or anything like that. I'm not talking about it, the seriousness or anything like that. I don't think a film has to be serious to be fun. I just don't think that this is that fun a film. I think it's quite boring. I just find it really, really dull.
Let me ask you this.
And I'm not even going to go into the whole jingoism and the Reaganite, element of it, which is of the time. I'm not even gonna go into all that. I'm just talking about a film, just to watch now. And I just think it's a really, really, a very lazy, lackluster film.
Communist.
The one thing I will agree with you is that I think the soundtrack is great. Mm-hmm. And it's a good job that it's great, because that's all that it is. Just a load of just a load of music videos all lumped together.
Dazza, why do you hate? Let me ask you some follow up questions. Dazza, do you hate puppies? Do you hate chocolate? Because now I'm starting to build a case against you, Dazza. Things are starting to come together now.
What's puppies and chocolate got to do with it?
It's one of the universal things. It's like everybody likes chocolate, everybody likes puppies, and everybody likes Rocky IV.
Hey, I came home with a bag full of chocolate from work today.
That you're going to throw away in front of children?
I'm going to eat all this chocolate. It's basically it's out of date chocolate from our coffee shop, but it's still chocolate.
Let's be honest. The real reason why you hate Rocky IV is because you're secretly a communist.
that is right. I cheered when Apollo died. I cheered when that American died.
And you hated the ending because Rocky single-handedly defeated communism.
You know how Rocky IV should have ended? This would have made Rocky IV awesome. And it would actually have set something up as well for the future. Okay. Imagine this. Okay. In this film, Drago wins and he kills Rocky. And the film ends with Drago standing there. So to victorious, and Rocky basically, but they use the American flag to sort of, to cover his hand. He's taken out. And then the credits start to roll. And it's like the really somber Rocky theme. And then you get a mid-credit scene. And you're in a gym.
I know where this is going already. It's going to be great.
And you see a shadow hitting a boxing bag, whatever they call them. And he's like, And you just see the shadow, and it's sort of all sweat. And there's a TV on the wall, and it's showing the Drago fight, and it's showing Drago basically sort of gloating that he's defeated Rocky. And the guy, you hear the punchback. He's still hitting the punchback, but it's sort of slower because you can tell that he's actually started to take notice of what's on the screen. And then the door of the gym opens, and light comes in. I mean, you see a figure. And you hear Adrian's voice, and she steps into the room, and she just goes, "I need your help." And she just comes in. And then the camera just pans back from the figure. And you just see a bit of light, and you just see a glimpse of a black Mohican. And you just hear it. And then it comes up, "Come in next year." Clubber versus Drago. that would have saved Rocky IV and set up for what would have been a fun movie. But Drago versus, that would have been a fun movie.
But Rocky beat Lang.
Sorry?
So but Rocky beat Lang. Who wants to see that? Another loser who Rocky beat versus Drago? Come on.
No, but yeah, but that's a different thing because Rocky basically beat Drago by beat Clan by basically sort of doing like rope a dope on him. Drago's not going to do, you know, this is like basically two heels going at it.
I thought you were going to tease Adonis Johnson versus Drago, the son of Apollo Creed.
No, because that's years and years away.
But I'm saying you could have done a thing where he was older, further along in the films. You know, he could have had Adonis when he was young.
No, okay.
enough of us fantasy booking the Rocky franchise. Okay, and I really don't have a slate. So just out of spite, I'm gonna go with yours, Back to the Future.
Okay.
No, I have no real legitimate case. In fact, I like the movie and I can't really pick a slate, but just out of spite for you liking Rocky IV, I'm gonna pick Back to the Future. Just to spite you.
Just to spite me. Fair enough. I've got to say as well, another film on there, and this is really gonna probably send people into order, another film on there that I really don't care for is The Goonies. Wow. If Rocky IV wasn't on this list, I would have chosen The Goonies. Hello?
Wow.
I never liked The Goonies as a kid. I had a thing against films that featured kids. It really annoyed me. But yeah, Goonies is not... Everyone talks about how great The Goonies is and everything, and Goonies, I just don't... Yeah. Never did it for me.
Yeah, let's hurry up and finish the show. Daz has to go make some children cry.
Okay.
that's what Dazza gets entertainment from. All right, since we're talking all things in film 1985, let's pick up what won Best Picture for 1986, Out of Africa.
Oh, okay.
Let's see if I can find out where this lands on the top 50 movies. I'm not seeing it.
Number four.
Oh, okay. I was really looking further down. Yeah, you're right. Number four. I was like, I never heard this film. It's got to be further down. It's got to be number 11 or past beyond that. Okay. Yeah. Not bad. All right. Since, part of the aspect of us doing it is the Golden Razzies for 1986. Since we're talking the year after, and that's when these, let's see, Golden Razzies 1986. What do we have for worst picture? Now, obviously before we've done before in the past, Dazza doesn't like to be teased, so what I do is I read off the nominations, and then I tell him what won Worst Picture. Okay, something that's very near and dear to our heart, Dazza, especially considering comic books, Howard the Duck.
That was pretty bad. Funnily enough, actually, if you read Howard the Duck last week, that actually, Howard the Duck comic actually featured... the Howard the Duck movie. I actually explained the Howard the Duck movie, how it fitted in with the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I was going to explain because obviously when we were talking Back to the Future, I was like, should I bring up the latest issue of Howard the Duck, or should I just do it later when we're talking what Daz has been reading? But yeah, now's a good time as any. That's a really good issue. If you haven't been reading Howard the Duck and you don't listen to us for whatever reason, why, check out that issue. It makes, like Daz just said, it makes reference to everything in the Howard the Duck movie. And like I said, it tries to make sense of how it fits in the Marvel comic universe.
Yeah. That comic, I'm really going to miss that comic. Because it finishes in a couple of weeks' time, and a couple of months' time, and that issue was just so well done and so clever in actually sort of explaining it and tying it into the movie. That was a good comic.
Well, it's a comic that's reading its natural conclusion according to the writer, which is absolutely BS. But it's just a funny thing that he added. Although I will say this, Dazza, fret not. The writer Chip Zdarsky has been put on another Marvel book. And I have to imagine this one may do a little bit better. Have you heard the news?
I think I missed this. Whoops.
He's being put on Star-Lord.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's a Star-Lord solo comic, so he's not fretting too far from the Marvel pantheon of comics. He'll be writing Star-Lord, and considering how big a star Star-Lord is, I have to imagine that comic won't be canceled like Howard the Duck.
Cool.
All right, other... Worst picture nominations for 1986 are Shanghai Surprise.
Oh, yes, definitely. Anything with Madonna in that period was total junk.
Cobra.
I hated Madonna at that time. Well, I've never particularly liked Madonna, But I really hated her at that time as well. And that's when she was married to Chris Penn. So it was like the husband wife trying to do like a movie together. Ooh. That was so awful. Yeah.
Cobra.
Another Stallone film. I've never seen Cobra.
Maybe you need to go out of your way. Since you obviously hate Rocky IV and that's a fantastic film, you'll probably like Cobra.
Yeah.
Blue City. And our final nominee, Under the Cherry Moon. Another film I've never heard of. This is interesting. What was
Have you read out the right year?
Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. It's 1987. Oops. I have a difficulty with numbers, Daz.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? Since we're talking Stallone, our first nomination for 1986 is Rambo First Blood Part 2. And you'll be pleased because that's not the only Stallone film that's on here. Rocky IV.
Yes.
Year of the Dragon. Revolution. And Fever Pitch. Now, Dazza, I know you would gain so much pleasure with the idea of Rocky IV would be worst picture for 1986. But you would be wrong. Rambo First Blood Part 2 won worst picture for 1986 according to the 6th annual Golden Razzies.
Yeah.
Since we're talking all things Stallone, worst actor, Sylvester Stallone.
For which one?
I know, for First Blood. Oh, actually, it was a tie. Cause I'm listing off the Wikipedia entry and it has them both respectively. So it was more so his entire body of work than really one film.
I have to say he's worse in Rocky IV than he is in Rambo. Because in Rambo, at least he's actually playing a character of some sort. In Rocky IV, for a lot of that film, you watch it, he's just got this sullen expression on his face. Mm-hmm. He's not even delivering dialogue a lot of the time. But yeah.
Okay, for worst actress is Linda Blair. Worst supporting actor is Rob Lowe. And let's see if there's any other worthwhile.
For what? Does it say?
For what exactly?
Rob Lowe, what film was he
in? Oh, I'm sorry, worst supporting actor in Selma Elmo's Fire as Billy Hicks.
Yeah, he was a bit weird in that.
Other notable, since we're taking Rocky IV and shredding it to bits, worst director. Stallone also directed that, which I didn't know.
Oh, definitely.
Wow. 1986 really hated him because worst screenplay is Rambo First Blood, which is also written by Stallone. Wow. Worst original song, Peace in Our Lifetime, Rambo First Blood Part 2. Wow. Oh, okay, this is one that, well, it depends. Worst musical score is Rocky IV.
That one I disagree with. Because the one thing about Rocky that you can't, the Rocky IV that I will disagree with is the fact that the music, as much as I hate the training montages in that because they serve no purpose and they miss the point, the music behind them was great. And even the actual, the theme music what do they call the band? The band, Survivor, they did the theme music for Rocky IV as well. And, that song, I did like that song. So the thing I will defend in Rocky IV is the music. Okay. Now, let's face it, you hear it enough.
That's the silver lining thing for Dazza. He's not a complete monster. He's redeemable. Like Suicide Squad, there is facts of him that are redeemable.
We can change.
Dazza can we change. Can there change. Is hope.
Except for my opinion on Rocky IV.
Oh, I imagine when you get older, Dazza, you'll appreciate that film. Yes, maybe?
Took a lot of Alzheimer's for that to happen.
There you go. Hey, I'll take a victory however I can, Dazza. All right.
I've got to say, just with the Rambo thing, I think Rambo's one of those films that is probably sort of looked back a lot with a lot kind of eyes than it was back then. I think a film that back then, to an action film where you had a guy basically being that unstoppable guy bringing down helicopters with bow and arrows and stuff like that. Now, nowadays, I think it's sort of, you kind of can get away with it. Back then, it was like a shock to the system. And the thing is as well, I mentioned this about the Reaganite politics. The you know, those two films in that year, they were so obviously sort of like America wanting to like win the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Or go back to sort of like Vietnam and win Vietnam. Because I think one of the weird things about Rambo is that the first film, First Blood, which I think is a great film, is basically like really sort of a film about how the, you know, the veterans of Vietnam were sort of like, you know, misused after the war and sort of, you know, and sort of marginalized and sort of, you know, and also like a proper thing to it. And then in Rambo, they basically took that character and turned him into like a, almost like a, like I say, a Reagan type sort of cowboy, you know, going into other countries and sort of like, you know, for, you know, trying to get America's place back in the world sort of thing. It was quite sort of like a weird time for movies, for doing that. And I mean, there's this quote in it where he says like, you know, do we get to win this time? You know, and it's sort of, and then later on, there's this like really weird sort of thing where it makes his speech how I just want to make my country as proud of me as I am of it and stuff like that. It really like is a big 180 from the first film, which is kind of like, you know, a really thoughtful sort of, you know, film that sort of, you know, looks at you know, America. In this one, it's just like a very weird sort of like gung-ho cowboy movie. It's sort of, you know, it's a very, you know, Rambo's a very strange film. And it gets even worse in the third one, where he teams up with the Taliban. We're not sure if that went on TV much nowadays.
I wonder why.
I wonder why.
All right, since we're talking all things film, I know you recently saw The Suicide Squad, but I'm curious, have you been watching anything else in the cinema?
Well, one film that I didn't actually watch at the cinema, I watched this week was Sharknado 4.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely loved. I love the Sharknado films. They're just so over the top.
Wait. Dial this back just a second. The same guy who was ripping Rocky IV loves Sharknado. I just want everybody listening to that to just let that sink in for a second. Continue.
Yeah. And I will defend that because Sharknado 4 is pretty much, to me, it's a glorified TV show, basically.
Oh,
you know?
The glorified music video, that's a bridge too far for NASA.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I really enjoy Sharknado. But again, Sharknado's fun because it's over the top and creative. I mean, you have a film where basically they turn Las Vegas into like a big tornado with sharks and stuff, and where they actually use the boat from the Treasure Island to sort of float down the sea. They're creative. They do fun films with that. Rocky IV was not creative.
Hey,
it just basically
Rocky IV had a robot, Dazza.
that was it. But yeah, so I Sharknado 4 absolutely loved over the top and everything. When I went to the cinema to see Suicide Squad, I actually watched a couple of films before I went to see, because I was waiting for midnight, so I was waiting to see the films. And I went to see, and I keep forgetting the title. I saw the film with The Rock. That was sort of the Rock film. That's been, you know, the sort of the buddy comedy one that he did. And I forgot what the film.
Oh, I know what film you're talking about. It's the one where he's the FBI agent, right? The one with Kevin Hart?
Yes. Yeah, the CIA one. I'll bring that up while I'm just sort of
Central Intelligence. Talking.
Central Intelligence, that's the one, yeah. It's sort of a fun movie, you know, nothing great, but just sort of some good laughs in there. You know, I enjoy that one. It was a good, like, pass the time movie for me. I was sort of fine with that. The other film I went to see was Jason Bourne. Oh, God.
Really?
This film. Yeah. I just found it really tedious and monotonous. There was just scenes that just went on and on forever. They just kept going over the same sort of scene. It was basically a scene where Jason Bourne would basically be making his way somewhere, and there'd be a crowd of people that he's sort of ducking in, you know, and there's people on TV screens in the CIA offices or wherever it is watching him on cameras and trying to track his location. And so he's going on the streets and they're trying to track him. And he goes into like a car park and stairwells. And there's other people who are also going, you know, doing their agenda things, and they're going through like stairwells and car parks and up elevators. And they're all going to this location and everyone's following and like sort of saying, you know, you've got to keep the cameras on him and all this, and going on and on. And these scenes would just go on and on and on. And then he'd get to where he was going. You'd have a brief scene of something happening, and then you'd have another scene where he was basically making his way away from that destination. And again, ducking into crowds and people, you know, on in video screens, watching where he was going, and him going through car parks and stairwells again, and elevators, and ducking through things. And then this sort of scene just occurred, oh, constantly throughout the film. It was just, I just felt like I was watching an entire film of a guy just walking through hotels and car parks and stuff. It just was so, it was just so boring. And this was meant to be like, I was expecting this to be like, you know, a fun action film with sort of car chases and stuff like that. And it was just so boring and monotonous. It really was.
Yeah, it seems like it's getting to the point in that franchise where it's just, it's a money grab. And I'm not surprised that you didn't like the movie. And it's one of those things to where it's like, it's a franchise that long overdue, it's welcome.
Yeah. And there's like loads of scenes where the entire film was basically based around people watching Jason Bourne on screens and through videos, and then mobile phones and laptops going into files and clicking on thumbnails and then reading the files. It basically made spy work and that sort of thing look so boring, which I actually think that is what actually spy work is anyway. I think in real life, I think spying stuff is like the stuff that you get in a Jean Le Carrier type film. You know, really sort of, like quite depressing and monotonous and really dull and lots of paperwork and stuff like that. And I just thought this film, it was just sort of, honestly, the amount of time that you were just watching people, like, you know, making their way into the destination and stuff, it was just so dull. And there was a scene early on, I thought this was hilarious. There's a scene where this woman cracks into she's got a laptop and she cracks into the CIA database. She gets through all the firewalls and everything. And then she brings up all the CIA files. And there's a folder that just says Black Ops. And she just clicks on it. And that's where all the Black Ops things are all there in files. Also to like, Sicilian Project and stuff like that. I mean, it's like, okay, if you have porn on a computer.
And I do.
Okay. And you have a folder. You don't call the folder My Porn, do you? You'll call it something like,
I hate to disappoint you, Des. No, I'm kidding.
you give it a sort of, another name like,
Special Software.
Work rotors for 2016, or Darren's comic conversation articles backup, stuff that people aren't going to look into, basically, a little bit. But you know, I'm pretty sure that the CIA don't have a folder that says Black Ops. And it was just sort of, that was just like a mild chuckle that I got. But that was actually the most entertaining thing I had in the film was when it gets to Vegas and they're going down, they go out into Vegas and there's a car chase that happens in Vegas, which is also pretty dull. But I was actually watching it trying to spot if they got the geography mixed up. That was the most enjoyment, and they didn't, but that was the most enjoyment I got trying to sort of, cause if you ever watch Con Air, that film's hilarious because the plane crashes on the strip.
Now I must know, what do you think
of the geography's all over the place.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, you okay?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was over-talking. Can you say that again?
Yeah, Con Air. Mm-hmm. In the film Con Air, basically, it ends in Vegas And the geography is like, and I know somebody like me would notice this, but the geography is like totally all over the place. Mm. So the plane's like sort of comes down and it's passing over the stratosphere at some point, and when it's passing over the hard rock. So basically the whole geography is screwed up. And when they go off on the motorbikes and chase, the 1 minute they're on Fremont Street, the next minute they're on the Strip, and then the sort of, you know, so basically, you know, but in Jason Bourne, we actually got the whole sort of like, you know, the geography sort of it right and everything. Although it did take him about like 10 minutes to drive down a bit of a street, but should only take you about like 30 seconds to drive down. But we'll forget that. But yeah, Jason Bourne was not impressed by that film at all. Really boring, real monotonous. And I hope we don't make any more. Well, if I do, I won't go to see it. I don't care. They can make as many as one. I'm not going to see them.
What do you think of Con Air?
Oh, I love Con Air.
Jesus Christ. I don't get it.
Con Air, for God's sake, you've got a character in there called Cyrus the Virus.
But Drago, the evil Russian, is far too much. It's too much for you.
Yeah, but there's nothing to Drago. He's just a big guy who basically doesn't hardly say anything. There's no personality to him. Oh, you know, Cyrus the Virus is awesome.
He's defending the character death of Cyrus the Virus.
Hey, Cyrus the Virus gets a great character death as well. he gets his head sort of basically, you know, squashed completely. But yeah, Con Air is awesome. I love
Con Air. I wish there was some consistency with you. It's like, oh, Dazza,
no consistency whatsoever with me. Absolutely like, none.
I was like, maybe he just hates, you know, sort of fun, silly movies, but he likes Sharknado and he likes Con Air.
But Rocky IV isn't fun.
Oh,
it's dull. It's dull. It's monotonous and dull. If you're going to make an action film now, you basically just go over top with it, you know, and make it fun and have sort of like, you know, way out characters. Put it this way, Con Air, I love Con Air because it's got Steve Buscemi as a serial killer in it. And he turns out to be like, you know, one of the guys you're actually rooting for in this film. And when he turns up, what's his name? We've got his name. Is it the Marietta Strangler or something? When he comes out of the truck and he's got all that shit on him, and they're having to use like six foot poles to basically guide him along because they're basically so terrified of him. Con Air's awesome.
But Rocky IV, that's a dumpster fire.
Yes.
Oh God. All right, Dan.
There's an article on Half Guarded, you know, explaining this argument.
Yes, it's a wrong argument, and I've read it, but it's a wrong argument.
No.
You have a wrong opinion, Dazza.
Nope. No. Sorry. I have backed this up with facts and reasoning.
People are entitled to their own opinion, except when it comes to Rocky IV, unless they're communists.
No, people are entitled to their own opinion on Rocky IV.
I know, I'm having fun, Dazza.
They are entitled to having fun. I'm just, you know.
I'm having to laugh, Dazza. I'm having to go. All right. Is there anything you've been reading as of late that you want to talk about? We sort of briefly talked about Howard the Duck.
Karl Marx Communist Manifesto.
I knew it. It all makes sense now. It's all starting to come together.
Bin Laden's autobiography.
I knew it. What's the Hitler book?
Why have I been reading? I've been reading all the usuals. Tons of Harley Quinn. I actually bought a shitload of comics today, but I didn't have time to read it. One of the ones I bought, I managed to finally get a copy of Rebirth. Ooh. And apparently it's fourth printing. I managed to get a copy, but I've not read it yet. The one actually I will mention because we've been talking quite a lot, but the one that I've been mentioned and the one that I've been really waiting for was a comic I read last week, which was issue one of Rom Space Knight.
Yeah, I read that as well. What did you think?
Disappointed.
Yeah, okay, I was right there with you then.
Yeah, really disappointed. The thing is, with it being IDW, what they've sort of done in the past is they've taken the sort of like 80s style comics and toy lines and stuff, and they basically sort of, you know, they've basically taken them, started them again, and done something. They've kept the core as it was, So the Transformers were all like the Transformers and everything, but they've basically sort of done a bit more with them. They've sort of like, you know, taken a concept and get it, you know, basically, you know, get it, really refreshened it up and sort of, you know, done something, you know, good. Kept the same core, but done something like, you know, 21st century something. With ROM Space Knight, they didn't really do that. What they pretty much did, and this surprised me actually, because they pretty much retold the origin story from the Marvel comics, which I found really bizarre, because the thing about ROM Space Knight is the toy where it was based on had no backstory. So Marvel basically made up the, you know, so it was basically Marvel's story that they made up. So basically IDW, they could have basically done any storyline they wanted to do. They could have just taken the character and just done anything with it. And they basically chose to basically do the, you know, basically just, you know, revisit the old ROM storyline. You know, which basically just do it more, basically just added more violence to it. And I was sort of fine with that for a thing, but it was just sort of, you know, it did very little. You didn't really sort of get much of ROM out of it. It was sort of, you know, quite bland. But the thing that really griped me with this is the final page, where basically where a squad of G.I. Joe people come out. So already they've sort of tied it into their little universe. And there's also an ad in there for, in a couple of issues time, that ROM's going to be in like the big crossover that they're doing for other properties. So they're going to cross it over with Transformers and G.I. Joe and Mask and Micronauts, which we've just started. So it's like, couldn't we at least have like done a year of sort of like a ROM only, you know, comic? Just to get the character going and get the storyline going and do something with it, and then start to basically, add guest starring roles and stuff like that. It just seems like, you know, it's like, just like, it feels really, really rushed, and everything's got to basically be this like shared universe, you know. And to me, the ROM storyline, the ROM space, I don't think it fits in well with G.I. Joe or the Transformers. You know, I was really disappointed, because ROM's one of those characters that it was from a very cheesy, 80s comic that was actually became a lot better than it had any right to be, you know, partly because they basically put it so heavy into the Marvel universe and had lots of guest stars every other issue and stuff like that. But what they did with it as the story went on, they managed to create basically a decent storyline with it, and it became a good comic. And with this, and it's one of these things that it's basically like a thing that a lot of people like me from that era remember more fondly than we probably should. But I thought that they could at least have done something, you know, taking this character and just basically done something a bit different with it. And just sort of like, made it a bit more relevant and today. As it was, I was just reading it, and it just was kind of, it's just like, it's just basically retelling the old ROM story.
Yeah, it's not particularly compelling either. I read this with the idea of, oh, this is good. Let's see what the guys think of it. And I read it, and I was like, guys, don't even bother going out of your way to read this book. It's not that good.
No, it is kind of like leave the memories alone. You know, it's sort of, you know, if you're going to do something like this, just do something with it. Because it's one of those, there's less of a backstory to ROM than there is in, say, Transformers or G.I. Joe and stuff like that. So you basically got a blank slate. You could do, you know, anything with this. You could basically, they've even basically done the Dire Wraiths, who was the villains in the Marvel comics. And they've basically redesigned those because they can't, you know. And they were never that great villains anyway. They could have just basically done something, you know, real special with this. Like when they relaunched G.I. Joe, they actually made, they revamped the Cobra terrorist group to be a more sort of terrorist group of like today. Mm-hmm. You know, and they made the comic a bit grittier. And they also sort of did something where they sort of had like, you know, the Joes as being sort of like they did like kind of like a storyline of it being sort of like, Because at the time there was a lot of controversy with, after 9/11 and everything, sort of like, you know, the issue of like, too much human rights being taken away and civil liberties and stuff like that. And they sort of tied that into the comic to make it, you know, a 21st century sort of take on the subject. And it just, you know, I thought they could have, you know, Rom, okay, it's a space night and everything like that, but they could have just done something different with it and made it a sort of, you know, something interesting that would appeal to basically people, you know, like me, who were basically going to sort of, you know, remember the character and, you know, and want to be in that. But also for like, you know, today's audience, and just do something different. And they didn't really, it was just like really uninspired. So I was, you know, really disappointed with this. And it's not something I'm going to be, especially as they're going to go into the big crossover, which, yeah, I'm not that big a fan of crossovers anymore. And particularly to throw Rom in there with the Micronauts and the Transformers and everything. I just, it's just.
I know it's fashionable to do it. You know, probably sell really well. But with that said, it's like, I don't have faith it's going to be any good, considering what they've done with a lot of the properties that they own, especially like Rom Space Knight. Now, the other ones that they own, I'm like, this isn't particularly good. I was expecting a little bit more from IDW, so not my hopes.
And because this is what they specialize in. You know, they've done some really good stuff with Transformers. Not everything they've done has been great, but when we first got the Transformers, they basically took it back to the robots in disguise element. You know, so they basically sort of did it as sort of like this being like a secret war going on Earth in disguise. They basically went back to that, and they sort of took it back to the whole thing about it being of like two competing robot races, you know, fighting over fuel supplies and stuff like that. But they sort of, you know, they went back to that and they sort of brought in elements like, have they had sort of like government agencies and these sort of corporations who were basically trying to get Transformer technology for their own ends and stuff like that. So they updated it, but, you know, they did some interesting stuff with it. With the Rom Space Knight, it's just, you know, and this was something that they specialize in. They just didn't do, they've just not done anything different with it. It's just retelling and rehashing the old Marvel storyline, and I think that's really a missed opportunity. You know, they could have done something, you know, a lot more better with it.
Okay. Like I said, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, not really. Just I'm trying to get them stuff written for Half Guarded. I've had stuff going on work wise, which is basically been limited on that. I did write a couple of Invicta pieces for last weekend's show. I did a preview show and a preview piece, and also a recap piece. So they're up on the site if anyone wants to sort of, you know, revisit them and sort of see the passion that I have for this particular MMA. And I got a few other things in the pipeline I'm going to be writing, which will be popping up soon, hopefully. But just a few ideas I've got. So, you know, just keep an eye out for that. But I will plug those pieces when they go up on this show next week, hopefully.
Okay, that sounds good then. So with that out of the way, that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.
Bye.
I can resist. All right, that'll...